idiot.
No, it's not, she replies. Is that a problem? I shrug. It's just, well, where are words when you need them? I like the pink, I confess. It tends to take away from my authority in a courtroom, Julia admits. This makes me smile. Since when do you care what people think of you? She doesn't respond, but something changes. The temperature of the room, or maybe the wall that comes up in her eyes. Maybe instead of dragging up the past, we should talk about Anna, she suggests diplomatically. I nod. But it feels like we're sitting on the tight bench of a bus with a stranger between us, one that neither of us is willing to admit to or mention, and so we find ourselves talking around him and through him and sneaking glances when the other one isn't looking. How am I supposed to think about Anna Fitzgerald when I'm wondering whether Julia has ever woken up in someone's arms and, for just a moment, before the sleep has cleared from her mind, thought maybe it was me? Sensing tension, Judge gets up and stands beside me. Julia seems to notice for the first time that we are not alone in the room. Your partner? Only an associate, I say. But he made law review. Her fingers scratch Judge behind the ear. Goddamn lucky bastard. And grimacing, I ask her to stop. He's a service dog. He isn't supposed to be petted. Julia looks up, surprised. But before she can ask, I turn the conversation. So, Anna. Judge pushes his nose into my palm. She folds her arms. I went to see her. And? 13-year-olds are heavily influenced by their parents, and Anna's mother seems convinced that this trial isn't going to happen. I have a feeling she might be trying to convince Anna of that, too. I can take care of that, I say. She looks up, suspicious. How? I'll get Sarah Fitzgerald removed from the house. Her jaw drops. You're kidding, right? By now, Judge has started pulling my clothes in earnest. When I don't respond, he barks twice. Well, I certainly don't think my client ought to be the one to move out. She hasn't violated the judge's orders. I'll get a temporary restraining order keeping Sarah Fitzgerald from having any contact with her. Campbell, that's her mother. This week she's opposing counsel, and if she's prejudicing my client in any way, she needs to be ordered not to do so. Your client has a name and an age and a world that's falling apart. The last thing she needs is more instability in her life. Have you even bothered to get to know her? Of course I have. I lie, as Judge begins to whine at my feet. Julia glances down at him. Is something wrong with your dog? He's fine. Look, my job is to protect Anna's legal rights and win the case, and that's exactly what I'm going to do. Of course you are. Not necessarily because it's in Anna's best interests, but because it's in yours. How ironic is it that a kid who wants to stop being used for another person's benefit winds up picking your name out of the yellow pages? You don't know anything about me, I say, my jaw tightening. Well, whose fault is that? So much for not bringing up the past. A shudder runs the length of me, and I grab Judge by the collar. Excuse me, I say, and I walk out the office door, leaving Julia for the second time in my life. When you get right down to it, the Wheeler School was a factory, pumping out debutantes and future investment bankers. We all looked alike and talked alike. To us, summer was a verb. There were students, of course, who broke that mold, like the scholarship kids who wore their collars up and learned to row, never realizing that all along we were well aware they weren't one of us. There were the stars, like Tommy Boudreau, who was drafted by the Detroit Red Wings in his junior year, or the headcases, who tried to slip their wrists or mix booze and Valium and then left campus just as silently as they had once wandered around it. I was a sixth former the year that Julia Romano came to Wheeler. She wore army boots and a cheap trick t-shirt under her school blazer.